Fun and working meditation.
Fun and working meditation.
Just got it.
That's the topic that we can look at.
Great.
Okay.
I just thought it was so much fun. I don't know if anybody else has fun, but I just thought it was so much fun. Uh-huh. And of course, there is the element of getting so much done in such a very short period of time that I find kind of exciting too.
I was going to talk about my fun and working meditation too.
Wow.
But then I'm sitting on the cushion.
So you don't get to.
I don't get to. Thank you. Jen.
I love that topic. And one of the things, when Sherry just said getting so much done in such a short period of time, it's just so fun that the rhythms of life, where I used to notice this on trips to Africa, to Zambia, where it would feel like there'd be one trip where it's like, oh, there's just, we can't. It's like walking through quicksand or something. But then the next trip is like, boom, everything happens. And to realize it's the same thing, like it's being set up in a way. Because like I was looking at today, there's so many, even little tiny things that could even seem unrelated to what actually then happens in this really short period of time, but there's so much that happens before that, and then that just all the pieces come into place, and those, you know.
So what I hear you say is watching the rhythms of life, that, in other words, the patterns of how things do get done. Like, that there's a period of time where it feels like there's nothing is moving. Then there's a period of time which is all about all the details. And all of it is necessary for it to come together for that rush of life force that causes everything to align and then get expressed as what got done.
Yeah. And one of the pieces, actually, as you were reflecting this, that I saw that it's one of those huge side benefits of training, which is not getting in angst about when it is going to get done and how it is going to get done and why it's just so interesting how I watch how there are some things where it's like, boy, I would have thought that I would have been able to do that a long time ago, or something else just kind of happens, but that everything, like life brings it up to the top of the list when it's time for it to be at the top of the list. And I don't have to be in charge of that.
Well, and say more about the training.
Because I really, really saw this with my hermitage. I talked about it a lot at the time, but so I moved into my hermitage, and when I moved in, there were still a number of things to happen with it. And I just watched how, for whatever reason, that was such a concrete way I could see that the training paid off, which was that I completely enjoyed everything about it. I enjoyed being there. For quite a while, it was, quote, chaos, right? There's just tons of stuff, and this is here, and these wires are hanging out, you know, just like that. But there was such a sense of relaxation and trust that it's all going to happen in lifetime. And that what I usually would get talked into before that training is basically life is on hold until I can get to the done place.
So the training part of it is to be present to how it is.
And being
present to how it is, meaning, well, I live here, and the wires are not done, and there's a lot to do, but there's a certain experience of relaxation, because the training gives us that experience of knowing, well, it'll get done when it gets done.
And
not to go to that place of putting life on hold until the outcome is reached, which is, I think, the conditioned process, which is, until that happens, then I can't be present and enjoy myself.
Exactly. I don't know if this is true, but I just thought maybe it's a corollary to that. In the same way that my favorite teacup is already broken, this project is already complete.
What I'm hearing you say, Jen, is that it's not even, it's refusing that belief to live this, the end is what we're living for. Mm-hmm. That what we're living for is to be in the moment and enjoying every bit of it.
Exactly.
And the end happens to be just one more thing along the journey of that unfolding.
And, you know, when we don't realize that, what I notice for myself happens, not only are we not promised what we're going to get at the end, but quite the opposite. Because if everything is put to the end, then the end is just a big, huge letdown.
Yeah. Well, because we haven't practiced being here for whatever it is.
Yeah.
So what makes us believe that we can be there for the end, whatever it is? It does feel like a letdown, because what we're listening to is the conversation that says the feeling when you get there is going to be great.
Yeah.
But when you get there, you still have the conversation of this is not great, because that's the only thing I'm going to listen to all the way to the end.
Right.
To the end.
Right.
Which goes back to that thing you were saying about being in the conversation of anxiety. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
That if I am in the conversation about how is it going to get down, when is it going to get down, or how am I going to get it done, or whatever else, then we're not present to the fact that we're participating in a process, which you alluded to in the beginning, of life orchestrating it.
Yeah.
And I'm not available to participate in that, or to be present to what I might be called to do in that process.
Yeah. There's like 6,000 things dropping.
Thank you.
Sequoia?
A couple of things. First of all, when I was doing the shopping today, and one of the things that happens to during shopping previously is the watch. Oh my gosh, what time is it? You know, I've got, you know, I need to be back by such and such time, and I, you know.
You know, for the groceries to be put away.
Right, exactly. And so, I just refused to look at the time, the whole time.
Yeah.
And how wonderful it was.
Uh-huh.
And I think, you know, it was like, so what? What's it going to change? No. You know, what am I going to do? Run up and down the aisle, you know, putting stuff in the cart.
Well, what changes is the pressure isn't there.
I think that
is really what causes us to enjoy things. Not just in a conversation that says, somehow or the other, this is an activity that has to be completed by any time. Regardless of how big it is, or small it is, or anything.
Yeah. It's just a process everywhere, you know, to be used to cause suffering. And I refuse to participate in it today.
It's like, how can I box life?
Yeah.
Without ever knowing anything about the condition. I mean, there's nothing real that gets input into that equation around how much time it's going to take, except that there's not enough of it.
Yeah. I mean, really. That's the whole purpose of that whole process. So anyway, so that was really liberating to just like, oh well, you know. And the other thing I've been kind of curious about looking at, we're talking on the radio show about, you know, life animating the form, and you know, and we're talking about working meditation, and I've been so I'm just curious. There are tasks that I do, that I feel life animating so strongly, and I hear, you know, life, and it's just really fun. And there are other tasks that I can't hear life at all. You know, it's just like, you know, all I can hear is conditioned mind, just, you know, I'm loud. And I'm wondering, you know, that certainly there are certain beliefs, I think, that's getting away probably from the get-go. Like, you know, certain things are hard, certain things are not hard. I don't know. It's just an interesting.
Yeah, it's an interesting place. So what you're aware of is that there are some places where it feels like just It's like you're in the canoe flowing with the current, and the current is taking you. Uh-huh. And there's an awareness of that experience, that alignment, that lack of opposition to what is just being the flow, let's just say. And then there are other places where that doesn't feel that way at all. There is such an awareness of conditioning, and there's just an interest in those two different experiences and a curiosity.
Yeah.
So do you have a sense of what the curiosity is?
Well, I'm curious because it's not content, it's process. And I'm curious because there's certain things like, I need to work at being present with this.
In the flow situation.
It's just never been a question.
Mm-hmm.
And then other things, like, wow, I don't know how one would even get to the flow.
Uh-huh. Can you give me an example?
If you tell me to write a curriculum for a retreat,
uh-huh.
and you set me down in front of a computer,
uh-huh.
it's like, and I know that I've had the experience of just, information dropping in,
uh-huh.
and then I get little bits.
And then it's like no more. Uh-huh. And so what do you see about that?
I see it must be possible to bring that same sort of it seems to be a lot of heavy conditioning around certain activities.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Well, I don't know if this is so. To me, any of those places where we notice that there's such a level of conditioning is a place to practice.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the practice being getting, as you said, really, really curious about what's going on here.
Yeah.
Right. Because there's curiosity, and I project the same process of not seeing the next step in the curriculum,
mm-hmm.
is the same process as not seeing the next step about what's blocking.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The ability to be curious and to wait and to watch, like, what is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
What is it that's stopping that flow that I experienced in other places?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And concrete ways that we know how to do that, right, which is to listen to the voices, listen to and be curious about the beliefs, what's being projected, can I record about this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to arrive at perhaps a place of presence from which whatever is that other place of flow where life reveals itself, then life will reveal the blocking place or the barrier which will fall away to reveal what the information is.
Okay.
let me project something wildly here, right?
Okay.
Are you told that this is not an area that you're good at?
Looking at, I'm sure.
That it's hard, it's difficult, it therefore has to be different.
Uh-huh.
And therefore there isn't the ability to just accept that this is a place of learning,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
a place of perhaps not getting to the end,
mm-hmm.
but to take the next step, and to be assisted to take the next step,
mm-hmm.
and to create in dialogue with someone who can assist you, rather than having to have the perfected skill on the other side.
I'm sure what gets in the way a lot is just an immense amount of pressure from
it has to be perfect.
Yeah,
it has to
be perfect. Hard part is just something. It just doesn't mean that, but it probably does have to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's interesting. It has to be something,
mm-hmm.
that it's more important to get it done,
mm-hmm.
than to be in that dialogue with life.
Yes.
for it to take as long as it takes for life to express itself. Same process as the pressure box, right?
Right.
You have to deliver it, and you have to deliver it in this
right.
time.
Right.
Doesn't matter what it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, going back to the house thing too. You know, it's not the done thing. It's the flow.
Yeah.
And that, you know,
Well, what's dropping in for me is, if we think of everything as a dialogue of life,
mm-hmm.
where life reveals itself to us, it doesn't matter what the content is. In the places where the flow happens, you're in the Olympic level of the dance.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You're in life together, you all know the steps. In those places where it's harder, you're in the first class. Right?
Yeah.
And you're getting to know each other.
Yeah.
And you're getting to learn the steps.
Mm-hmm.
And you're getting to create the dance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to take that, getting that dialogue, that communication,
mm-hmm.
that revelation
mm-hmm.
to create it. And that takes just that waiting and openness and invitation to be where you are, to learn the steps.
Yeah, and speaking, I just see that, I want to be in that learning, I want to be the learner, I want to be, I want to be in that place of learning and going through, you know, practicing with those things that are not so easy, that, because I can see there's a tendency to want to go, well, that's easy.
Uh-huh.
So much fun, you know,
yeah.
and then to avoid, and then it becomes something that has to do with,
pressure
and content and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas to just have,
we're
back to the joy of learning.
That's the context. It's a very different thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that you have to produce.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that you are in the process of unraveling.
Wow. I can see that there's some real deep-seated things about that, and not beliefs around not being able to to do it.
Yeah, because I don't think we are allowed to see ourselves in all of what we are. We're prevented from engaging in something that's difficult.
Exactly. It's not about me anyway. You know, to just watch how life runs. To just get out of the way and watch how life wants to express in this.
Thank you. Scott.
I love that comment you just said about we're not allowed to see all that we are until we get to engage in something difficult. So I've had like about 100 times more fun in working meditation, like just in the couple of years that I've been here, than my entire life combined. And it really just points out it's about the how and not the what. I had to see a real difference today in that how. When we're having a lot of fun in working meditation, we're being guided. You know, all the energy is here, paying attention, doing the motion, and that orchestration that life's doing with all of us working together as a team, like there's just sort of nothing better than that.
It's like true.
I'm out of the head, I'm in the body, I'm being guided, I'm saying yes, it's really fun.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing you say is that all of the attention is here. All of the energy is in being in the body, doing the thing that we're all doing together, and there is no energy left over to give to it.
Which before that I was doing that portion, the giving energy to it, not really quite realizing that was going on, and I was just seeing as people were talking that place of life orchestrating, and then the place of I need to orchestrate how working meditation is going to go, is a form of resistance.
What a powerful insight.
Yeah.
That I needing to orchestrate it is actually a form of resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
because it's kind of like in everything else I do, and I've noticed this in facilitation when I first, because I've done a lot of jobs where I did something like facilitation, and then I came here at the monastery and I watched in the beginning this resistance to letting go.
Uh-huh.
No, I know how to do this. and how to talk and listen and essentially direct people, I think is what it was about. And there's been this process of being worn away in facilitation. And now it feels often, or much more often, that I'm being animated. Life's just talking through me, you know. And the same thing, so now I have another role that's around organizing work stuff at times. And I feel like I'm back to the beginning of the guy who thinks he knows how to organize it. And he knows how to do the talking to people. Uh-huh. We also know how to organize.
Uh-huh.
But it's like life's going. And it's like, well, let me just grab onto the wheel for a little while. Mm-hmm. Or it's sort of the pseudo, okay, right, I know I need to let go, but my hand's still on the wheel. Life's like your hand is still on the wheel.
Yeah.
You know,
uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and what I hear you say, and just like in the other place, it's so clearly two different experiences,
mm-hmm.
that when there is no separate self,
mm-hmm.
and life is animating, there is a sense of fun, a sense of enjoyment, a sense of being in the body, a sense of presence, and a sense of stuff getting done because life is doing the movement.
Yeah, life.
And that sense of being identified with the someone is resistance I project because it's that person who believes that they can control life.
Yeah, or they have to.
Or
know,
they have to.
You know, all this karma, uh-huh. people are counting on, that's his role, da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
And I sort of forget the original guidance was a lot of what I would be doing is facilitating.
Yeah.
That's what was going on.
Yeah.
And the different people involved in the actual project and that kind of thing, not having to organize it so that people and it will and they will and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and what I'm hearing you say is that separation of self and life.
Yep,
right?
That's
there's
exactly
a separation which says I'm outside and I have to orchestrate.
And I'm somehow operating on this.
Yeah,
the subject object, which is a clue right there. If you enter the subject object relationship, and so the belief in that place is, well, I don't know how to do this. Which I doesn't. It doesn't make any sense to I.
Right.
Well, what do you mean? And then it's like, wait, you do know this. You let go, you get present, and things drop in.
Uh-huh.
It's like, yeah, but I don't know how to do that for this.
Uh-huh.
Wait a second, it's the same process.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a different content than being on the cushion.
Yeah.
And it can be the same, if I bring that same level of, when you're on the cushion, you're facilitating people, it's real obvious when you're not here. And it can be a really painful place.
Mm-hmm.
So at the beginning, there's a lot of motivation to be here and not let the attention waver. But somehow, being around the property and doing working meditation and organizing, there's not that same level of motivation. Or I haven't seen it as, there's no time to be out, not here,
mm-hmm.
as I really get that when I'm on the cushion.
Mm-hmm. Yet.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's the same process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I meant that in what I was projecting here, so let me reflect and then be more poignant, which is the awareness that on the cushion, it's very, very obvious that if you're not here, it's a high stakes situation. You get to presence as a way of, how would we say, for everybody,
mm-hmm.
right? That if you're not here, then it's a painful process.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the same process of having the cells dissolve or getting out of the way in order for life to animate, mm-hmm. that happens on the cushion. Somehow, the ego excuses, the content is different.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do it.
Right.
I don't know how to do it here.
Mm-hmm.
But there's that awareness that in both cases, what was operating and should and needs to sort of be surrendered is that process of the self.
Yeah,
and so
exactly.
It brings us to that place of, if I can do it in one place, I can do it in all places, because it's the same process.
Yes.
And that place of, oh well, in one place the stakes were higher. Right? And I'm facilitating the stakes were higher, but I mean, we get to that awareness that the stakes are always high.
Exactly. I mean, that's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I don't know, this might be one of those places where the connections haven't been made here, because there's that sense of separation where it's the really high stakes is to save this person.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that seems to be the journey.
Yeah. So if we don't have that direct visceral sense of the impact on another person, we can be bamboozled into believing that there is no one to save, and therefore I don't have to be present.
Right, completely missing.
That's right.
Yeah, this is going on right here.
Yeah. Thank you. Rebecca.
Well, what I define that is that for me, working meditation is the experience in the tangible physical world of pure undisturbed consciousness slipping into all consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can do it there, then I can do it here on this cushion facing a blank wall.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that I've never seen that, that it's just a transference of the same process.
Mm-hmm.
Because it often feels like egocentricity has much more of an advantage here. It's just me facing a blank wall than when I'm out doing something because, you know, that is a benefit to the whole.
Uh-huh.
It feels like that there's a spirit of service or a dissolving of the self or a, you know, that it can, that's more accessible in the action of weed eating or gardening or, you know, moving an outhouse or whatever. That is just because what was so inspiring about working meditation today, especially, but every day, is the teamwork element of it. It's such a team. I mean, I thought I was going to be washing produce, right, at 3 o'clock, and then oh no, you're going over here, and somebody fills in over here, and then you know we got it, and then tomorrow we're going to, you know, it's just such a interchangeable parts almost of a well-oiled machine that is everybody showing up, and we get the pleasure of a lot of important, lovely things getting done.
Yeah, so it's a physical experience of the dissolving of the self, pure undisturbed consciousness slipping into all consciousness, where the separation dissolves.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a move, there's that movement, there's that all parts. I mean, to me, what you were pointing to, what dropped in some way, we experience non-separation.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that we're all participating in uniquely in this large tapestry, but there is no there is no separation.
Exactly.
So there's the tangible experience of all of the parts coming together to this absolutely wonderful whole, and life moves through all of us to produce this wonderful thing that is for the benefit of all. I mean, that's the experience of non-separation,
exactly.
Right? What's compassionate for all.
Yeah.
And it's much more challenging when we're sitting in, for you, I think you're pointing to, when it's just you in front of the wall.
Yeah.
That it's harder to experience non-separation.
Yeah.
And so it's what we're talking about with Sequoia. Those are the places where the work is, right?
Yeah.
That access to that sense of non-separation, which is accessible in some places, to transfer that same process to the place that doesn't seem to be accessible. As accessible.
And let's see, there's something that I use this example all the time because it's very powerful, but it's those wonderful rebuilding your vision exercises.
Because
once I can feel the difference, the movement, I mean, it could be, let's see how to say it. Well, once I can feel the difference in my body, in my eyes, and I'm not doing anything different, it's just a slight shift, then it's possible to do it other places.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just like the gift that physical activity is. Once I can feel that movement in one place, then it's applicable in another, and it just feels like there's the groove or the neural pathway or whatever that's being formed that makes that happen.
Well, it's what we were talking about on the radio show with the little boy and the unconditional love, right? That as soon as you can, this is the object that takes you to that experience, and you train yourself to follow it back to the experience because it's happening here. Then, from here, I can access the experience for any external object that I haven't actually experienced it with.
Oh, that's a great connection. Yes, thank you for that. Because what I just saw is that what happens, and why the reason I so love physical work, I loved what Jill said on the radio show Tuesday, by the way, was I think she started out with saying, and I hope I don't forget my point. Anyway, I'm just a big fan of work. Okay. What was my point?
Physical work.
Oh, I got it. Okay. It is because of the way that it moves the energy. Mm-hmm. It moves the energy so efficiently. Mm-hmm. So I can show up at a work assignment just knowing that I'm caught in a big old fat story and egocentricity is just where I am right then. And I know, oh, just give me an hour of really hard labor and I'll be fine. I mean, really, I'll be fine. And I know I will.
Yes. And the reason we know that is because the life force is what ego is holding hostage.
Yes.
Right? And so if there's a pattern in which is being held in place by participating in a life force activity where the participation moves the energy, we are in some way being our attention is being redirected really, really effectively.
Yes.
Right? It's like tree, you love me.
Yeah.
It's that kind of movement
where
the attention goes to some activity which is so much more powerful to shift the attention than our ability to do it in a conversation and conditioned mind.
Well, and even more than my ability anyway at this point to do it when I'm facing a blank wall. Because it's what you said about the lovely back. Okay, so if I can trace that back and know the feeling of having that energy move through that physical work, what's the process that can be duplicatable on the cushion? Mm-hmm. I wonder if I'm thinking about that right. You know, like there is a way to there must be a way. If it can happen in movement, then it can happen in stillness. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking. I don't know. But it does seem like because it just gets more indulged when I'm sitting here trying to count the breath or be with the breath and the stories are just churning in a way that it doesn't get indulged when I pick up a weed eater or whatever.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm not quite tracking. But that would be an interesting exploration in terms of the process of duplicability, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we talk about it a lot in the sense of when we're listening to the radio show, even if I'm identified, because the attention is on conversations that lead to center, then I'm led to center because my attention is here.
Yeah.
Or when I switch on a recording that I've made from a place of center, it brings me back to center.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So that way in which I am the identified from identification, I'm not attempting to go to center because there's no way the I can go to center.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Uh-huh.
There's a way in which there's the awareness of the identification and the training that knows that something that will bring me to center is where the attention needs to be.
I'm hoping you'll tie that into when I'm on the cushion, then what does that look like?
But it's the same process.
There's just something that...
Well, what was dropping in, and if Sherry wants to jump in, that would be very helpful, but here's what's dropping in for me on the cushion, where the assumption is that, I mean, that here's my projection, that the assumption is it has to be a specific experience.
Yeah, I was kind of hit. I was heading there too. That there is some sort of a control element going on there.
Yeah. Well, because to me, if I'm present to whatever it is, however it is.
Yeah.
Rather than feeling like I'm in this identification, which is sort of what I was pointing to with Sequoia, that if I feel identified, then I have to feel differently.
Yeah.
I have to move this energy. I have to be having a different experience. It's being caught in a process of not being present, not being in the surrender to the process that will move the energy.
Yeah, and it may very well be just that. It just feels like there's this other element of an indulgence that happens because there's not a something.
Yes, and so then the curiosity is, how is there no indulgence?
How
is there no indulgence?
Yeah.
Right? Because if we rest on something like a recording or the boy or
the work
mm-hmm. as a way to move the energy, mm-hmm. then what our projector are looking at is how to move the attention or the energy even when that is not there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the $64,000 question. Mm-hmm.
And our projector will find out.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
May I?
Yeah.
I don't know if this is helpful at all, but with what you were just describing, so the little boy was such an easy one, and so what I'm doing is training myself to recognize that place, mm-hmm. and it's recognizing the place actually that gives us the experience. So I don't need to. So if I'm working, and actually attention is very active when we're working. It doesn't seem like it is because we're really engaged and busy, and it's back and forth. And so then I sit down on the cushion, and it's not so much back and forth, right? So if I'm doing working meditation. And I know where attention is as I'm doing working meditation. I don't just let it go because I'm having a good time, mm-hmm. but it's still attending to awareness. Mm-hmm. Then I can get a sense of what is the experience about this that I'm loving. Mm-hmm. In the same way that I can think about the little boy, and I can experience that in me, because as you said with the recording it takes me right to center. So I'm doing that process and essentially experiencing where I and how I experience life animating. Because mm-hmm. that's what's happening in all of those situations, right? We like the feel of it, particularly in some situations. Mm-hmm. Which again goes back to the why are there some things that I just love and it's easy to be in the flow and other things not. But if we know, if we have the ability to put our attention where the flow is, mm-hmm. then it actually doesn't matter what we're doing or not doing physically.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so many things were dropping into me as you say that. So the practice, the training is to put the attention on where the flow is.
Yes, if we want to use that,
it's
that
to
image,
stop
yeah.
the process of flow mm-hmm. rather than the training that a particular content evokes a particular feeling. It's a particular process is where the attention is. And what I saw when you were saying that, going back to something we were looking at in the radio show, which is, we're training to see from the perspective of life animating us. And so if I can easily do that when I'm working, and I tune into the sight that I'm using to be able to see life animating, that's the process I'm training for in places where I don't feel it.
That's right. So if we use, again, the little boy, and I feel that, okay? And for somebody, it's the cat, or it's the dog, or it's the, you know, it's a whatever it is. But it's that unconditional, our experience of unconditional, right? And so now, can I feel it with this? So we go out to the garden. Can I feel it here? Okay? Now, can I feel it... Mm-hmm. In this situation, mm-hmm. can I feel it? And what we're training ourselves to do is to come back here instead of going obviously up into conditioned mind.
Yeah. And my experience of doing that is that the flavors of it are different. The process is the same, but part of what we recalibrate is how we experience it. I don't know if that's true or not, but
well, I think it's a process of becoming more and more subtle with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because a process of becoming more and more subtle. And we will go through various places and stages until eventually, again, it doesn't matter what the circumstances are because the attention is on awareness. And really what we're closing in on, it seems to me, is the non-dual nature of existence. So if everything is emptiness in form, if we're experiencing form and we're experiencing emptiness of that form, then if we are experiencing, we could call it light, we could call it love, we could call it whatever we want to call it, as long as it's not, some of it is this and some of it is not this, mm-hmm. right? So it's the, we're beginning to experience that divinity, that holiness, everywhere, all the time, in everything.
Yeah, going back to pure understanding.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the challenge, I think, that we're looking at is when there's nothing else going on, there's such a habit to go to conditioned mind. And that's really all we're struggling with, is breaking that habit.
Just a helpful discussion. I'm resonating so much with some certain kinds of activities are just a flow, you know, others are not. And I was listening, part of what I was thinking about my own work experience here is the sense of teamwork. For me, in the garden, what's the most fun is the teamwork is with the garden,
uh-huh.
you know, and all of us can participate on that team, but the garden is its own team,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, so I'll walk around and I'll suddenly see, like, today I walked around and I said, oh, there's a cold button, uh-huh. and you know, it's there, there's an oven, and there's a pea, and there's a bean, and there's, and it's just doing it,
uh-huh.
so it's always there to be interacted with,
uh-huh.
but it's got its own life, you know. So that's part of me. Part of what is the fun for me in the garden is the incredible vitality that I simply walk into and then the gate.
Yeah, the incredible vitality that you walk through as soon as you're in the gate, and to take that as a parallel, right? That is something that we can wake up into and say, hello, life, I'm available.
Yep.
It's the same process.
Yep.
Because if we're in that relationship to life as we are to the garden, then every moment is a vitality, an invitation to experience the vitality of life, which has a life
right.
that I'm part of and can interact with.
Right,
yeah.
And non-separation.
Yeah.
So, then I have another working meditation assignment these days, which is making cold calls. I don't have that experience. What I was seeing so clearly is it is all about separation.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's about me and them and who are they anyway and what are they going to think about my calling them and it's just, you know, I get on the phone and the guy will never have seen anything, please don't answer me. and so I'm just what's been helpful about this discussion is seeing this, you know, that me interjects, and there isn't all that. You know, I'm seeing a piece of paper and a telephone. There isn't all that life around me simply calling forth all the life in me. So
there isn't that life around me calling forth the life in me.
Yeah, and the garden is such an animating place in my experience. So it's just been really helpful tonight to look at. So all the stuff that gets in the way and all the separation that arises and all the thoughts and feelings and beliefs about them and first of all that there is a them and a me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just inspiration to think about what if that list of people is like a garden.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. All these little lifelets out there
yeah.
and I'm gonna interact with.
Uh-huh.
know, sometimes I go out and the plant's dead. So maybe I call somebody and they, I say, can I talk to you for a minute? They say, no.
Yeah.
And other people say, oh, yeah, so, that, so maybe it's like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's all it is, and maybe that's what I can bring to it.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that to bring the application of that process in another place mm-hmm. could be to actually... The how is so is that simple, which is the shift in the attitude of mind with which we approach it. Either it is us and them, or me and you, and this doesn't mean fighting. But if I can switch it to go, I'm entering a garden, it's just the form of the things that I'm interacting with that are vitally alive are different.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's what we're talking about, I think, in training ourselves to see the process, so that what shifts is looking for that which is vital and animating rather than that which is separating in any situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just one other thing that has arisen recently that is related, which is also sort of breaking through the separations. So I mentioned in group a couple weeks ago that I have a sore toe, and I have these hand exercises, I've got tendonitis, a tendency to tendonitis, and then I have these hand exercises I never do. And the facilitator said, oh, you never do. So anyway, I rediscovered this putty stuff that I'm supposed to use that I can pull apart and do these things with my hands. So the other night I was actually doing them. And I couldn't remember them all, but you know, you can Google them these days. So I Googled all the things you're supposed to do, and I was doing them. And it felt so good to just be working with my hands, mm-hmm. not thinking, oh yeah, I have this problem.
Uh-huh.
But the hands and I are working together. And then life dropped in and said, what if I did this with my feet?
Uh-huh.
So I put it on the floor, on plastic, I put it on the floor and kneaded it with my foot.
Uh-huh.
And for quite a while, and I got up and there was no pain. There was no discomfort. And you know, eventually it came back a bit, but I think if I continue to work like that,
mm-hmm.
you know, not with orthotics and not with mm-hmm. bandages, but just work with the foot
uh-huh.
and say, does it feel good?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And one of the things I think about was, don't do it with a sock on. Nothing come off a sock. So now I use the sock, but I ordered some more of this stuff so I can continue doing that with a sense of the foot and I working together, you know, mm-hmm. getting over the separation. And I just have a sense we're on the right track.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's the same, it sounds to me like the same process as the garden.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
There is no sense of separation.
Right.
It isn't the foot that there's something wrong with that
yeah,
I have to do something
yeah.
about
yeah.
that I actually don't want to do.
Right.
Which creates that further separation.
Good point.
But to just engage with it as you would a kohlrabi or something that greets you in the garden
right.
and to work with your hands and to work with it, to work with life rather than
right.
be separate from it and feel like we have to do something about it.
Yes. And really with a sense that we're all in this together.
We're all in this together.
The toes, the fingers.
Yeah. Well, and I bet if the toe felt the same way.
Well, I bet it's my sense. You know,
yeah.
it's like I had a sense of, oh, I am enjoying this.
Yeah. Hello. You know, that to me is the thing about working in the garden. It's
yeah.
like there's such a tangible interactivity with the existence.
Yes.
And it's not separate,
mm-hmm.
and yet it's a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's an engagement. There's a back and forth that we participate in.
Yeah.
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 Thank you.
I just feel like I might as well say something. I'm here, and it's just, you know, such a great opportunity to be with Sangha in person.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just like too many things to share. Every day it seems like there's something huge.
There is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's always huge.
We're not here for it, yeah.
Yeah, we're here for it.
Just while working in the garden, I've been loving that. I especially, I'm just thinking or just wondering what about it I love so much. Just seeing the life and the growth and the connection to the food and to our bodies and the insects and the, you know, just the whole everything. And I also love the direction I'm given, like, just here, do this exactly. Okay, I'll do it exactly. And it's nice to have, like, I wonder if that's part of what I love too. But there's also freedom in that, you know, because it doesn't feel harsh. It's just here, this is the way we do it. And, you know, for example, build a little fort around the little fruit tree that's trying to come up. And I got so excited, oh yeah, I'm going to build a fort. But then it turned into a nest. It really looks like a nest. But I loved it, you know, so I could really get into it. And then at one point I was in my hermitage and it just all of a sudden it's like, Penny said a fort, not a nest. And it was like, oh, please. I'm just going to try anything. And then it was like, well, a nest is a fortress to the eggs, you know, whatever.
Because I've been stopped and reflect, because I appreciate both the things, both processes that you're pointing to, which is that awareness of all of the things, awareness of enjoying myself or enjoying something, and then pausing to see why. You know, to illuminate the process of love and the flavors of love. Because I was doing this in the back course this right after washing the produce, and I was really having fun knowing that I wanted the porch to be clean and the fruit to be, there was no trace that the fruit had been washed. And there's a way in which it was like life enjoying what it knows about itself. Mm-hmm. And that process of really pausing to go, I know something about myself. It's like, I know something about myself. This is how I love. Mm-hmm. Right? And that just dropped in when you were saying that ability to go, why do I love it so? Mm-hmm. And the answer to that question illuminates an aspect of life that is love, that's lovable. And so that was wonderful. And that place of knowing that being given an instruction that is pure information that we can receive as information is so liberating. Right? There's no room for conversation. I can just follow these instructions. So simple. Yeah. And of course seeing how it attempts to take it away from you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me share something else. Because this seems so huge when it occurred to me. I think if the nugget or it's the seed got planted by the daily peace quote about what others think about you and how it doesn't matter whatsoever, and the same with whatever, you know, egocentric karma conditionings, self-hate thinking or saying, or, you know, it's all just an attempt to take me away from now, and it doesn't matter whatsoever. And so I really liked it, and then I sort of went on with the day, and I was folding laundry and just saying, you know, just like thank you, just saying it, you know, thousands of times a day, and it just goes by itself. And What it was, all of a sudden I realized, and it sounds so obvious probably, but what if, because I have this thing about some things that have happened recently and that people will know or they think poorly of me and judge me and all these projections and whatnot. But it was like, well, what if they all adored me and loved me and praised me? It doesn't matter whatsoever if I'm not here, if I'm not loving me, you know, if I'm not loving this being, it doesn't matter. Like if I was a celebrity or something, you know, who people writing me fan mail, or, you know, or people just loving you and projecting on you, and what does it just, you know, and I, it was just so liberating. I just, like, I just stopped and was like, oh my goodness, just stunning this. Because in my life, I've had times where, oh yeah, you know, Chris is a lawyer and a PI, and she's this and that, and athlete, whatever. And then now I feel so humbled because of all sorts of life circumstances. And I wasn't happier when people thought, when I thought, or whatever, when I was reverse projecting or whatever, you know, just, it doesn't matter. It just was like, oh. It was just so freeing to think, to realize they can think great or bad. When I'm abandoning Chris, when I'm checked out, or when I'm sneaking around or doing things I know are unhealthy, or then I feel terrible. And when I'm taking care of myself and practicing and have you know, I don't know if you want to reflect, but just part of it.
Well, just how you say it, right? Just, it is the most liberating insight to know that the unconditional love and acceptance is here, right? That whole process of looking for validation outside is not actually a process that ever results in validation. And even if it does, it's always conditional, right? Mm-hmm. And so with the insight being your awareness that it's gotten you for a while now talking to you about what would people think if they knew all this about you, right? And falling for it makes us feel awful. But what your awareness was is when everybody was, when it was saying everybody thought wonderful things about you, it didn't make much of a difference. That what your experience was is this, or our experience is the same whenever we're listening to a conversation in conditioned mind, because it's almost always self-hating. So the difference between those two places that you're pointing us to is if I'm here and present, what is being reflected is love. Love for this individual, love for this human being, love for all of that non-separate reality. And that's the only thing that's real and the only thing that matters. And if we're in that place, that's our experience. And it's not dependent on what this thinks or what anyone, or what this and anyone else thinks. And we are truly free because our well-being and our sense of being loved and accepted is not based on anybody or anything else.
Yeah, it and it feels so good to step into the role or to become, or I don't know what, but just to feel more adult and more. I just really had self-indulgence confused with compassion. Like, I don't know if it was just, I don't know, but just my life. It was like, just have whatever you want, as much food, you know, just overdoing it a lot of ways. Feeling like, well, that's feeding me, you know, but like literally also, but it just feels so good to like maybe not be stuffed and overeating or, you know, all sorts of things, and my body's just like, oh, thank you. And it's just it's such a trick. It's like pulling the rug out from under ego when I'm satisfied with like half as much as it says I need. It's just, I mean, it really is mind-blowing.
Yeah,
like,
it is mind-blowing when we realize how much we get bamboozled into believing that self-indulgence is compassion.
Mm-hmm.
But the objective of that being all that's being said is it.
Yeah.
Right? That the body is made, the body doesn't feel good, the human being is given a load of self-hate for whatever it is, and everything, I mean, all of us are suffering. There's just suffering there. But to recognize that, wow, it really actually feels good for the body and for the human being to be grown up and have a little compassion, self-discipline, right? But let's not feed it. Let's just be present and look to see what would actually be healthy for this person and for this body. Yeah, it is mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing a project to see through the bamboozle. Mm-hmm. How it's gotten, how it's been doing it to us.
I mean, I can't even express it. Because it tricks me every meal for 40 calories. Every meal. And it's like just shocking. And that's just, you know, one example. You know, that's just the process. So it's just I love it.
That wool gets pulled over our eyes in order to feed it, and we're being told that's how we need to be good to ourselves. Thank you.
I appreciated that conversation so much. I mean, the whole conversation tonight, but that really reminded me of, I had an insight yesterday that was one of those places where it just feels like something moved, right? You know, just on that, wow, that level. But it's so interesting that that image of the nest came up, because that's exactly what it was. I've been given recently the gift of this image of a baby bird, and looking at the baby bird kind of as this metaphor of, I don't even know, actually. That's part of, been part of the koan, is like, okay, there's this baby bird, and I'm, you know, caring. But out of nowhere, just yesterday, it dropped in, the baby bird hasn't had a nest. Mm-hmm. And I can't even tell you. It was like, I just saw my whole life flash before my eyes. Mm-hmm. And it explained so much. And it actually feels like a big piece of what facilitated it was that conversation on the radio show about the little boy. That was a remarkable conversation. And the other piece that dropped in that seems related in this conversation was a comment that someone made in the Saturday workshop when we were given an assignment to, I can't remember exactly how it was worded, but record what, why is life love that you're here? Or what does
why life is life happy that you're here?
Why is life happy that you're here? And someone said, this is what I heard in it, is there isn't a reason. There isn't a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, what I thought that with that insight, it's like, oh my gosh, there's been no nest. For the first time, there was a nest.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. In that moment.
Yeah. I couldn't even reflect that and make sense of it. Because it's at that level. I project what the wonder of it is, the same wonder that we were looking at. There's it's just a process of seeing something that causes, seeing something, I project, in a particular way that causes all of these pieces that we cannot articulate to come together in a flash of insight that makes everything make sense. Which no one can tell. You cannot tell what that is to anyone else, because from meeting a beginningless time, jagged pieces have been going around, and some little something causes it all to come together, and the breakthrough in sight is an experience. For my experience is seeing divinity in some way that I've never been able to see it, and that's all it's required, because it just shatters eons of karma.
And you know, as you say that, I think one of the things that's so helpful is there's been such a level of trust for a long time, but especially lately, and kind of trust that, okay, I can't tell what's going on here, I can't, sometimes it really doesn't look like I think it needs to look, or it should look, or it's feeling the way, but such a deep sense of trust that I don't know, and that, you know, things are just shifting around, and then something like that happens, and it's just such a, maybe it's one of those constellations,
right?
We just get given that thing a glimpse, exactly.
Yeah, the thing that is that baby bird on inside the shell and the other side, that we know that the knocking is happening, the shell has to break, and the union has to happen.
It does.
And what that means, or that from within the process there is no no comprehension.
Exactly.
But when the shell breaks, there's instant comprehension.
Instant. Yeah.
And then like you know, take the garbage out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And recording is such a beautiful place in something like that, because I keep recording and it's like, oh my gosh. It's like, and it's basically saying the same thing, but it's brand new again. It's brand new.
Yeah. And I think it brings us back to what Jerry was talking about. Ultimately, it's always the process of it, right? Yeah. Because so hung up on what is it?
Yes.
And what it really is. Yeah. Is being in the dark, being in the dark, being in the dark, showing up, mm-hmm. being in the light, mm-hmm. being the light, mm-hmm. being in the dark. Okay?
Yeah.
And so once we get it that that's the process, there's just the excitement of being in that breaking through moment inherently as a process.
Yeah.
Not because we saw something, but because I'm in that place, in that process. Yeah. And that's where I go back to what my mom always tells me about the Vedas, is that they're sounds of ecstasy. Because when you're in that place and you have nothing to sing about, mm-hmm. you just have to make noise.
Yeah, that's good. And you know, it really brings us full circle, because what I saw when you were reflecting all of that was that then you get to that place where the trust is that when there's the quote chaos, like of the hermitage, that's part of it.
Yeah.
That's not, and we don't then idealize the places where it all comes together. I mean, it's fun. It's like today. It all came together and we did something that it's been years. I mean, for me, like putting those outhouses in there new and they're empty. Woo! You know? So it is fun. It's not that it's not fun, but it's that it's not that conditional, like I have to have that experience.
Yeah. The faith
is
that it's all part of the process.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So may I just
yes,
one more thing?
Yes, 7 minutes.
I have 7 minutes, right? But I just love the fact that we can all talk to each other, which I get to with great regularity, because it's true. We get to one of these places and go, and we either try to say something about it, which just goes nowhere because it just so misses the point, or we don't try to say something about it because we know it's going to sound the way it sounds. And yet we want to express it because it's so huge. And I thought the way you put that together was really helpful. That it's the being in that process, and that there aren't any words to express that. Mm-hmm. But it is so huge, and what we're seeing is so enormous, and the flash of light is so bright. And to be with people who know that experience, so that you just kind of point at, you know, and it was really big, and they all know, big, and then we don't have to try to explain it.
Yeah.
Because if you've ever gone to try to explain it to somebody who doesn't do something like this, it's
energy draining.
Oh, it's just a misery for everybody involved. Anyway, I'm just appreciating that. And you know, we're all just like this. Loving those moments.
Yeah. I think that it's the flower curtain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that it comes back to that beauty of samsa, I think. That it is only the group of people who walk together. First of all, that you feel safe to have the conversation without being dragged to mental institutions, and that it's a validation mm-hmm. or a true sharing, because mm-hmm. it's an experience that someone else has
mm-hmm.
that they can participate in the joy of you having that experience.
Mm-hmm. Does everybody know what she means by the flower sermon?
No.
I didn't think so. And so if you would.
Which one of them is it?
Hmm?
Mahakashyapa.
Oh, Mahakashyapa. I'm not going to think of that. Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Both of them have strange names. And you're the flower. So, supposedly, the flower servant is this, Buddha was making a, was giving a talk. And at the end of the talk, he holds up a flower. And there's only one disciple in that whole group, Mahakashyapa, who actually goes, who smiles. And that is that transmission of the teaching of awareness that can only be experienced. Mm-hmm. That there are no words, that when he held up the flower, he was completely communicating his experience, which could be received by someone else who...
Which is what we experience tonight, right?
Yeah.
People talk about that moment, and it's the same as the... Because we all just go,
yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.